Hi, my name is Patrice Rubio. I'm a producer with WJFF Radio Catskill. And today I'm joined with journalist Owen Walsh of The Red Reporter, Isabel Braverman with the Sullivan County Democrat, Chris Rowley with the Shawanagan Journal and News Atomic. And all three of them joined me for another round of Reporters Roundtable. And today we'll be discussing town and village board meetings, sort of what happens in them, the experience of reporting at those type of meetings and sort of pressing issues that are going on currently in those towns. This past year has really changed how the public interacts with the local government because now a majority of the meetings are now being broadcasted on Zoom. Has anyone seen an increase or an increase in participation or in attendance during this pandemic? How about we start with you, Isabel?
Sure. Well, I've actually sort of seen the opposite.
Okay.
I cover two towns, the town of Tustin, which is mainly Narrowsburg, and the town of Delaware, which is mainly Calicoon, not to be confused with the town of Calicoon, which is not the hamlet of Calicoon. Some confusing Sullivan County history there. But the town of Tustin is continuing to hold their meetings on Zoom. And that is definitely getting, you know, some participation and attendance by the public. There's been quite a few people who have been coming to the meetings via Zoom. And that was sort of the same pre-pandemic, I would say, around the same amount of people. There's actually a very dedicated small group of people who come to every single town of Tustin board meeting. So they're continuing to show up. Town of Delaware has gone back to in-person meetings. They do not have the option of Zoom. And that actually is, I'm the only person there. I'm the only one who's been going to those meetings, at least recently anyways, I would say, you know, for the past couple of months. I think this is sort of on a different topic, but as with many town board meetings, many times people show up when there is an issue that they really care about, or there's something going on that they want to have their say in, or just hear about what's going on. So I see that a lot with Town of Delaware, where people do do come if there's a bigger issue, but you know, that's sort of a different subject. I think in general, though, like you said, having the Zoom availability gives people way more chances to be able to come to these meetings and hear what's going on.
How about you, Owen? You covering town board meetings or village board meetings. Have you seen an increase or decrease in attendance because of the pandemic? And now some of these meetings are being virtual. And I don't know, what's your experience in PA? Is it, are the meetings virtual there? Or are they doing a hybrid or...
So the two main local government things that I've been covering for the past year or so, maybe close to 2 years now, has been the Honesdale Borough Council and the Wayne County Commissioners. And actually, through the entirety of the pandemic, the Wayne County Commissioners never had any virtual options, and they still don't. They, you know, just kind of kept on meeting in person the entire time, just with, you know, the addition of having to wear masks and everyone needing to socially distance. And if they felt there were too many attendees for everyone to gather in their usual small meeting room, they would move the meetings to the courtroom, which is, you know, the big expansive courtroom. So they actually never had a virtual option. On the other hand, on the opposite end, Honesdale Borough Council went virtual pretty much the same time as everybody else did. All the other, you know, boroughs and townships throughout the area did. And they tried a few months ago to get back to some in-person meetings. And then that was kind of right before the winter of 2020 came, and then things, you know, numbers started getting bad. So then they went back to virtual. And now I guess they're sort of doing a hybrid where, you know, there's still the virtual option. I believe, you know, the press and the members of the public still call in and listen on their phone or their computers, but some counselors are there in person in the meeting room together. So it's kind of a hybrid right now. And I guess similar to what Isabel was saying, you kind of see the participation flux with whatever is being discussed at that meeting or kind of whatever's going on throughout the town. And that kind of has been the same both pre-pandemic and during the pandemic. You know, you would see probably the majority of meetings were pretty sparsely attended. There's kind of the same members of the press, obviously, and a handful of members of the public who would turn out to every meeting no matter what was going on. And then every now and then there'd be, you know, something that really just ignited the passions of the public. And, you know, it seemed like half the town was there. You know, a few specific topics stick out in mind. Probably the first time I really saw it, and this was before I was even a reporter, but I remember just hearing about how packed this meeting was. In Honesdale, there's this like structure. I don't know exactly how to describe it, but it's in the shape of a star and the shape of a cross. And what used to be the case is that during the Christmas and Easter seasons, they would, you know, light the star and they would light the cross during Easter. And a few years ago, there was this group called the Freedom From Religion Foundation that said that because, you know, this star cross, this religious iconography is on public land, that it, you know, violates the separation of church and state because it, you know, is land that's owned by the borough. And I remember after that, you know, after the borough received that letter, there was an extremely well-attended public meeting of townspeople who felt very strongly about keeping this star cross up on the cliff and not wanting to see it removed. More recent example that happened during the pandemic, so it was largely virtual, but just you could tell by the number of people who spoke during the public comment period, you could tell how well attended the meeting was. The borough had proposed this media ordinance that would basically do more to regulate the production of media within the borough. So according to the councilors, this was spurred by some company came to Honesdale a few years ago or maybe last year at some point and shot a commercial and closed down part of Main Street and blocked off part of the sidewalk. So some businesses and some people complained about that. So then in response to that, the borough kind of drew up this draft of a media ordinance that would require, you know, licensing and paying a fee and, you know, getting, you know, basically getting approval from the borough before creating media content within Honesdale. And the way a lot of people of the public read this ordinance, the way they read it, it seemed like this was going to be applied not just to major film companies coming into the borough, but also, you know, just someone who's on the sidewalk who wants to maybe shoot a video using their cell phone, or someone, you know, a couple of friends who are making a small movie and want to use the sidewalks of Honesdale. They, you know, were looking at this ordinance and it didn't seem to draw any distinction between, you know, a major film company and just someone shooting a video on their cell phone. So that was another thing that, you know, a lot of local business owners and a lot of just regular members of the public were very concerned about, you know, possible overregulation. So that was probably one of the longest meetings in recent history, just because there are so many people who came on to voice their opposition. But, you know, typically, I would say for the most part, there is not too much participation on a, you know, any given meeting. You're probably going to have maybe one or two members of the public talking about something to the counselors. But, you know, kind of is regardless of the virtual option, it's kind of what it takes is if there's some topic that really ignites people and gets them angry about something or passionate about something in some way.
Right. No, definitely. Definitely. I do see it. Definitely. Like I said, when it's an issue that definitely affects a lot of people and, people are definitely passionate about it, and especially these hyper-local meetings and hyper-local areas. Like I say, outside of the borders of that particular town may not matter, but this particular town, it does matter, and people do show up when it affects them the most. How about you, Chris? What has been your experience with the pandemic as far as the attendance goes in town board meetings or the village board meetings that you cover?
Well, I've continued to cover Ellenville and Wawarsing in person throughout. And as with Isabel and also with Owen, you know, often I've been the only person there who isn't a board member. But, you know, this year I have noticed that the Zoom thing has begun to really, accelerate. There's been more and more people. In fact, last night at a planning board that I did cover by Zoom, there were 25 people on. So I think that what Isabel said is what's happening. It's easier for people to attend that way, and so they are bothering to search, take a look. But again, it is, as Owen said, Isabel said, when there's an issue that upsets people, then they come. You know, right. It's they show up then, and it's a curious aspect of everything. You know, everyone, we've all heard this, right? Everybody who writes for anything, anytime, you know, why do you always write about the bad news? Where's the right? Well, you know, the thing is, the good news is fine, but nobody gets that excited about it, you know. Whereas the bad news, wow, here they come. You know, it's an interesting contrast with what happens.
Now, like you talked about, like I said, these most attended meetings are that has those big issues that people care about. Chris, you could tell us anything that's going on in any of the meetings that you're covering now that sort of is a pressing issue or the hot topic, for lack of a better word?
Well, okay. So on the town board side, which we'll see this week at the Town of Worcester Town Board on Thursday, I would think one of the big issues will be the how are they going to deal with the American Rescue Plan funds, which are coming to, you know, all the municipalities in Ulster County. Ulster County is getting something like 32, 33 million, and it's going to be divided up this way, that way. And there's some interesting language about in all of this, because it turns out that cities and other municipalities are divided into two groups. There's those groups that belong to the entitlement side. So City of Kingston is entitled, and the town of Worthing is not. So the City of Kingston will get its money directly from the federal government. Town of Worthing will get it via New York State. So they will still get the money, we assume, and then Town of Worthing and the Village of Ellenville will split their $1.38 million. And, you know, this will be a good shot in the arm for some. Anyway, so that's going to be an issue. Most recently, last night, there was a planning board meeting. I find that planning board meetings are usually, or can be, the really exciting ones. This is where, you know, things break. This is where people discover that, you know, what? There's going to be development of that field that I didn't buy?
Right.
You know, my view shed is suddenly going to sprout 12 homes? Oh, no! You know, and so that brings out the, you know, the furies, the NIMBY factor. And last night we had a good example of that, and there was a lot of people on, and a lot of anguish was being expressed. But, you know, so those are the issues right now. NIMBY and the planning board, and, you know, a reasonable chunk of money. Well, Worthing stands to get about just a little bit more than $1 million, and wow. Ellenville will get a very much needed $333,000. Which I'll be interested to talk to the village manager and the mayor about that, see how they are feeling once that money, you know, begins to arrive.
I think those are definitely
big issues for this next year's awards.
And I'm sure it comes with a set of how they get money could be spent in a town. It just can't just go to anywhere. I'm sure it has to go to certain things in the budget.
The local supervisor, Terry Hart, told me he got a PDF accompanying, the announcement of the money from the government, 151 page PDF.
How about you, Isabel? Any the pressing issues that are any of the towns you're covering now?
So in addition to the towns, I also cover the county legislature, Sullivan County. And there have definitely been a lot of hot topics, so to speak, recently, especially in the past few months. Definitely a lot of conversations around the pandemic. And in the beginning, you know, it was like, how, how are they going to shut things down? Then it became a really big issue of the budget and how the pandemic was going to impact that. Now they're saying that they actually weren't in as bad a shape as they thought they would be at this time. So the funding from the American Rescue Plan that Chris was talking about will definitely come into play. They haven't discussed that yet, but I believe it is on the agenda soon. But a really big issue that has been happening in the county legislature is the county's nursing home, which is the care center at Sunset Lake. Initially, the county was going to sell the facility, they said, because of financial constraints, that it had been losing money, and that with the pandemic and the impacts that that was having on finances, that this was seen as sort of a necessary step to try to combat some of that financial hardship. However, they faced quite a bit of backlash from residents, the community, and you know, people associated with the nursing home, such as the employees or people who had family members staying there. And they really pushed on the legislature to not sell the care center. And the legislators did end up changing their minds. And now they decided to lease the facility to an outside management company that is going to come in and manage it. And that was a process that took a couple months, and it's still ongoing now. They're still finalizing the contract with this company that you know, needs to be finished, and then they're expected to come in soon. But that really did draw a lot of attention. You know, people are now coming to the meetings who may had never gone to the legislature meetings before. They're speaking during the public comment sections, and they're just becoming more and more involved. And so there are, you know, just a lot of things going on at the county legislature right now, I think, that are drawing people to attend.
You know, definitely. And I've seen some of the live feeds. Sullivan County government broadcasts their county meetings live. Curious to see, I don't know how you can find this out, but be curious to see how many viewers actually watch the meetings live, or, you know, look back at it again post.
Yeah.
The meetings.
Some of the meetings, like you said, there are social distancing protocols in place. So there's a capacity that can go into the meeting room, which is at the government center. And there were a few meetings that were at capacity, and people couldn't come in. Although they sort of took turns with some people leaving and some people coming in. And then you also mentioned that, yes, they do live stream the meetings, which they did before the pandemic as well. However, some people are asking them to, you know, use Zoom or some sort of similar thing so that people can still watch the meetings and participate. Because right now, just with the live stream, you can watch it, but you can't, you know, give a public comment. So some people are asking for that as well.
How about you, Owen? I know you touched on some of the topics that you cover.
For Wayne County in general, I would say that a lot of the things that they're focusing on the most fit under kind of two umbrellas, the one being infrastructure and the other being COVID relief. A lot of the commissioner's job the past few months has been, you know, receiving a lot of federal funding and state funding to help the local economy and help local businesses. And then they're tasked with, usually in a very short turnaround time, you know, creating this application process for local businesses and people to apply for this COVID relief, and then making sure that it's getting doled out fairly to everybody. And, you know, that's kind of taken up, I think, a big chunk of their time the past few months. And then the other umbrella being infrastructure issues. And it kind of ties into COVID, actually, but one of the biggest issues for Wayne County at any point is the lack of broadband. The figure that I often hear from Commissioner Joe Adams is that one third of the entire county's population does not have access to high-speed broadband. In other words, access to the internet. And it's not necessarily in these cases, it's not that there are people who, you know, could have broadband or could have Wi-Fi access, but just can't afford it. It's that, you know, there really just aren't any companies like, you know, internet service provider companies that are willing to come out to these kind of remote parts of the county and create the infrastructure that's needed to for them to have access to the internet. So the commissioners have actually tried to use some of the COVID relief that they have received to kind of increase broadband throughout the county, get more people hooked up to the internet. Because obviously, you know, during this time when so many things have gone remote and virtual, it's kind of more important than it ever has been to have access to the internet when you need it. Some other infrastructure issues in Wayne County, there are quite a lot of dams that for some reason, Wayne County has the most number of dams in need of replacement or repair than any other county in Pennsylvania. They finally, it seems like the PA Fish and Boat Commission is finally getting some funding. They actually have acquired the funding to start repairing these dams and refilling the lakes that have been drained for a number of years. And, you know, it's when you just look at how many lakes there are throughout the entirety of Wayne County, and you see that when they're filled, they really bring a high population of people coming from outside the state or outside the county just to come fish here, or, you know, use go kayaking or canoeing and just, you know, all these water recreation activities. It's a pretty important piece of the economy that's been missing for the past couple of years. So I think they're pretty excited to, you know, get some rehabilitation projects underway. Looking more specifically at Honesdale, I think I even talked about this maybe the last two roundtables we did, or at least one of the last of the two, is that police coverage has just been a huge topic in Honesdale. It's the lack of police officers that are working in the borough. So Honesdale does have a police department, but it only has like three or four full-time officers. So it's, you know, not enough to have a 24/7 police force. There's, you know, a wide range of opinions, both on the Honesdale Council and just throughout the public, of people who some people feel that, you know, well, we don't need a big thriving police force because, you know, we have this PA State Police and they can come if there's some emergency. And it's not like Honesdale is overrun with crime as it is. So it's, you know, we really shouldn't be dedicating too much time and energy into this when we could put it towards other things. And there are other people who feel the complete opposite and say that, you know, the state police are located too far away so that their response times are not going to be fast enough if there's some emergency that happens in the borough. And, you know, they feel that it's kind of the priority that we should have over anything else is getting the funding necessary to have, I think it would take about 9 officers to have a full-time police force. So currently there's about a third of that. So it's quite a ways away. So you often hear the counselors disagreeing about that. And you often hear members of the public kind of weighing in with their two cents about it. The other thing that's pretty big in Honesdale right now, which is, I guess, a little bit more of a positive note, is revitalization efforts. So the kind of economic arm of the borough is the Greater Honesdale Partnership. And they recently completed a study looking at all these wide, various ways that they could revitalize the town, both in terms of, you know, kind of like marketing the town to people on the outside who haven't heard of Honesdale before, and also just, you know, literal fixing of sidewalks and building facades and just making it a more aesthetically pleasing looking town, maybe changing some of the, you know, traffic patterns and the way parking lots are set up to make it, you know, just a better experience for people who live here and who come and visit here. And it's going to be, you know, they recently just completed this study, so it's not, you know, going to be any changes that are going to happen overnight. It's several years out that a lot of these projects would, it would take, I think they're looking at a 6-year turnaround time to get some of these projects done. And if they were to pursue everything that was covered in this study, it would cost about $9 million. So obviously it's, not going to happen overnight. So it's going to take quite a lot of fundraising and, kind of building up support from the public and obviously trying to get some deep-pocketed sponsors, people who feel strongly about revitalizing the town. But that's probably one of the, biggest things that both the council and the economic arm, the Greater Honesdale Partnership, are looking at right now.
Like I said, it's amazing that, I've asked all three of you the same type of question. And obviously some things are similar, but it's amazing how, each town sort of has their own little thing going on and the issues that are that are affecting people. Now, one thing in my experience, past experience with covering town board meetings that, sometimes it's just you and the board, or sometimes there are a couple of people from the public who are there. But these are folks that are meeting every 2 weeks, sometimes every month. They see each other all the time, make small talk. So it sometimes does become sort of like a social event for people. And being a reporter, you sort of, if you're there for a while, a couple of months, a couple of weeks, you start sort of getting to know everybody and sort of become embedded into the meeting and sort of become part of that, the whole atmosphere. So for that, that's been my experience. But does anyone have, I just want to go have a little light conversation now. Does anyone have sort of a funny memory from a meeting or a moment that sort of stuck out to you in your time covering meetings? Like I said, you don't have to mention any names or mention what town this happened in or anything like that to protect the innocent. So Owen, do you have anything? Or
I don't know if I have one specific memory that I can think of right now as like the funny thing that happened to me at a local government meeting, but there definitely are just kind of things that happen that are kind of amusing. Like, just the way, like Honesdale Borough Council in particular, there's just, I think sometimes the smaller the town, the bigger the passions can be. And, the more fired up people can get about, these local issues, I guess, because it, it's always kind of been interesting for me to see. You can't tell it as much now with the virtual nature of the meetings, but when it was in person, there'd be at times some really heated disagreements between the councilors, and you their faces are turning red and they're turning and yelling at each other and pounding on the pounding on their podiums in front of them and just getting so fired up. And then once the meeting ends, you see I guess just enough time has passed, and now the fact that it's not the official meeting anymore, everyone's getting up and going home, and now they're just walking out together talking like just like they're old buddies again. It's like councilors and local politicians seem to kind of be able to compartmentalize, when it's the official meeting is happening and, they disagree about some issue, they can scream at each other and feel like, it feels like there's so much tension between them. And then, once that's all done, they kind of remember that, we're all just in this one community together being, and then they're neighbors again. So I guess that's kind of just the most interesting thing that I've seen, is just kind of that compartmentalization of, when it's the official meeting, and then just when they're everyone kind of goes back to being okay with each other again.
Right. No, definitely. I agree with you. I've seen that myself. It's a strange thing to see sometimes, because it's like, wow, these two people were really going at it and it seemed heated. But, like I said, the next moment they're, fine. How about you, Isabel? Any funny memory or anything that sort of stands out to you in your time of covering meetings?
Yeah, similar to what you were saying before, is that when you do go and cover these meetings, you really get to know the people on the board, as well as the people who regularly go to the meetings. And so I think there are always some funny moments where the board will call you out and be like, oh, I hope you're writing this down. And, that happens a lot. It's a not very novel joke anymore, but something that I'm sure we're all used to. And yeah, I've been covering the town of Tustin and the town of Delaware, both of them for a pretty long time, a couple years, because, you know, I used to work at the River Reporter and I covered them there also. And kind of just a funny story is when I was at the River Reporter and I was at the, I was covering the town of Tustin meeting, and there was this girl, Autumn, who worked at the Sullivan County Democrat, who also covered town of Tustin. And we had the same exact glasses, like literally the same pair of glasses. And so one time I was at the meeting and someone on the board started talking to me and they were like, oh, how was your trip to Cuba? Like, I bet it was so amazing. They were just, you know, talking and talking, and I'm, you know, standing there really confused, like, what is he talking about? And then I finally realized, I was like, oh, you're thinking of Autumn. She works for the Democrat. I work for the River Reporter. So, you know, that was sort of a funny moment. But now that it has been a few years, probably like over 5 years covering both town board meetings, you know, really do get to build a relationship with the town board, and they can sort of tip you off on things or tell you about things that are happening or going to happen. And that is, I think, really important, especially in community journalism, which is what we all do. And just helps to, you know, keep the public more informed, which is really what we're there to do.
How about you, Chris? Any funny moment or anything that stands out to you in your time of coverage?
Well, I've been doing this quite a while now, which kind of amazes me. I've covered quite a few towns, lots of different boards. And I think the standout event that sticks in my memory was actually the town of Rochester, not Wolverhampton, the town of Rochester planning in regard to an application by an outfit that takes care of feral and lost cats. And of course, it would be cats. And this brought more people to that planning board than you can imagine. I mean, they packed it out. There were people coming from other states. There were people coming from Connecticut. There were people coming from far away. Their passion about this was unbelievable, because there was a group that were accusing the applicant of killing cats, which is something that, you know, I mean, it's enough to start wars over it, apparently, you know. So that particular meeting became incredibly frenzied, and everybody got up and down with incredible passion in their voices about this particular topic. So that one I remember. There's no question that stuck in my mind. Another thing would be a few years ago, over the question of cable and broadband, and I wanted just to come in on that, because that is a key issue for all of us. We had a split between the town supervisor and the town board, and it was irremediable. It could not be corrected. And again and again, the two parties came to a head-to-head, refused to, could not accommodate each other, and it went on that way until basically that supervisor lost election, and we got a new supervisor, and things have moved on since then. But with broadband, the issue really is that the cable companies are not going to do it. It's so expensive to wire up the rural hinterlands that they're just not going to. In New York State, Spectrum, which is what Time Warner became, is even under the hammer from the state to do it, and they just don't. They'd rather go to court and spend their money on lawyers. So it isn't happening. Or if it does, it's very slow. Meanwhile, here comes Starlink from Elon Musk and his little satellites, which will bring reasonable quality bandwidth, high bandwidth broadband to anybody everywhere. The whole world is going to be within Starlink's remit. They're going to have these little satellites coming over at such a rate that we'll all be able to get them. It's $500 to get the Dishy McDish face, which is the receiver, and about $100 a month. Well, anyway, that's going to change the conversation, and that's going to change the way housing and everything else develops in our rural areas, because it will no longer be dependent on having a cable that costs $10,000 a pole to bring to your property. That's not going to be the question anymore. And I look forward to that, because I personally will need to get that one. I mean, I'm doing okay with the current satellite, but I would really like to see really high speed. You know, moving from 15 Mbps to 30 would be great. To 50, fantastic. To 100, unbelievable. So, you know, we look forward to that. And I think that is going to come. And that will help with schools as well, because a lot of students who don't have cable are really hampered at this point. They are really, really suffering. And whenever it goes to remote schooling, they basically fall behind. You know? So that's an issue that will be attended to. And then the final thing about Starlink is, because I did a piece on this, is that what they're looking for is just to get a slice of the global telecommunications market worth about maybe $50 billion a year. And that money will basically support Elon Musk's drive to put people on the surface of Mars. So when we're all using Starlink, we'll know that we're sending those rockets driving towards Mars and beginning the beginnings of human civilization on another planet.
And talk about this sort of, you know, how things change and how the pandemic has changed things. But just before we move on, I just want to recount one of my funny stories. I don't know if it's a funny story, but one of the first things that stood out to me was it was one of my first board meetings I was covering. So it was, you know, I didn't really, just to give people some insight, I didn't go to journalism school or anything like that. I sort of learned on the go. So no one really taught me how to cover a town board meeting. I read some books and stuff online, but winged it. So, you know, I was nervous and I think I got someone's names wrong. Someone came up to me and complimented me. It was, you know, a very nice article, blah, blah, blah. And then just slammed his hand on the desk and said, next time blah, blah, blah comes up, you make sure you get her name right. And it really like yelling at me. After that, he was the nicest guy ever after that. But that left an impression on me. I would love to say that I've never gotten someone's name wrong ever again after that. But I strive not to get someone's name wrong, because, and if we do get it wrong, you know, because we're a newspaper and we're this, you know, year sort of changed everything. You're talking about how broadband has really is sort of became a need now, especially now with the pandemic and everyone's sort of doing everything remote. Have you seen how has the pandemic has changed local government, and how do you think going forward is going to be different? So my question is to everyone here is has the pandemic changed local government? Yes or no? And do you see it changing in the future post pandemic? Owen, do you want to go first?
Sure. You know, I think beyond just kind of the daily operations of local government, you know, doing things virtually versus doing them in person, my prediction would be, or my guess would be, that the more lasting change that the pandemic will, you know, the mark that it will leave on local government is kind of the way financial things happen and the way things are funded and, you know, the applications for grants and, you know, just since this COVID, you know, since this COVID pandemic started, there have been so many different avenues that are, you know, COVID related for both local businesses to receive grants and, you know, the local government agencies to get grants to, you know, like we were just talking about, broadband is probably one of the things chief among them. You know, that COVID is just tied into so many different aspects of our daily lives that I think Perhaps local governments, although it's not like they were unaware of, you know, the idea of grant writing and applying for, federal funding for things. But it's not like, you know, it's a totally new concept for them. But I think just, I think maybe especially like in Homesdale, looking at some of the projects they have going on now, I think maybe there'll be more of a concerted effort to, you know, just keep applying for grants and looking for funding opportunities, just because at least what I've seen in the pandemic is that there are so many different avenues to get money for what you're trying to do. You know, if you can show people that you're trying to, you know, perform a public good, you know, there really is a lot of funding out there for a lot of different things. So I think, you know, if I had to make a guess of how the pandemic might have a lasting effect on the government, I think that would be my top guess, is maybe kind of a greater focus on that kind of thing, which hopefully will be, you know, positive in the long run, is that even once, you know, for the past few months, a lot of these funding opportunities have been kind of, you know, they always had the word emergency in front of them, some kind of emergency relief, emergency funding. Hopefully, you know, when the emergency goes away, people will still kind of have this mindset of, you know, just, finding money where the money is, and then, you know, bringing that into the community to, you know, get things done.
How about you, Chris? Do you feel that the pandemic has changed local government, how it's run, or do you see it being changed in the future post-pandemic?
I haven't really noticed a major change in how it's done, how it's run, except that I think Zooming is bringing more people to, you know, actually participate, to show up for meetings. And take notice. The nuts and bolts and the mechanics of it seem pretty much the same. There was a kind of an attitude last year that was definitely it was audible, in that, you know, everyone was aware they were in kind of a small boat tossing on a stormy sea, and there was a sort of an element of danger and everything, and there was a serious concern, you know, and as we looked down to New York City and we saw the explosion of, you know, the death rate and the rest of it, right? You know, that took hold. And then Ulster County didn't really suffer that way. And we didn't get that bad either in Worsing. So the sense is that we sort of dodged a bullet and all that. And now I think everyone's ready to get back to going outdoors without having to wear masks and all that. Everybody is vaccinated. In fact, okay, our newspaper, we will probably have our very first editorial meeting this week where everybody in the building is vaccinated and has had their second shot, even our youngest person. So that is a step forward. You know, we may even be able to have editorial meetings and not wear masks. You know, right. I mean, these are little steps forward that I think are taking us back to normalcy. But local government has just carried on. You know, we're going to have elections this year, and there'll be a few people will change and they'll go forward. But the issues remain. And what Owen was saying is true. But I think, at least in Worsing, there's been a long-term pressure to get grant money for quite a while. And Worsing has a particular, and I'm not even going to give out his name because I don't want any of the people to get him. But we have a fantastic grant writer who actually hangs his hat in Pennsylvania, and he has brought Worsing more than $10 million, $10 million in grants over the years, right, to completely replace and renew and refurbish the water and sewer systems in Cohonkson, in Napanock. I mean, it's astonishing how much they've managed to get. And so that kind of thing is what we're going to see, I think, as much as possible. Because that's the only way that a lot of that expensive infrastructure can be dealt with.
And how about you, Isabel? How do you think, or do you think the pandemic has changed local government? And do you see it being changed in the future, post-pandemic?
Jumping on the broadband bandwagon, Sullivan County has also made that a top priority. I believe they had started this initiative before the pandemic, but the pandemic really spurred it on. And as everyone has already mentioned, it became very clear the importance of having broadband. So the county is actually starting a pilot program in Monticello, and they're going to provide high-speed broadband at a lower cost to people within a certain radius within Monticello, and see how that goes. And then they hopefully plan to expand it to the rest of the county. So I think that right there is a very big change that we will potentially see from the pandemic. Sure. The other thing, as we've already mentioned, is the funding from the federal government. I believe it's actually on the agenda tomorrow at the county legislature. They will possibly be discussing what to do with the funding. So that will be really interesting to follow up on and see what comes out of that. Another change I'm seeing, like Owen said, is, you know, this the concept of emergency and emergency funding. I recently did a story on the county's emergency communications assistance center. They set that up at the start of the pandemic as a place where people can call to get information. Then it sort of grew. They handed out masks and hand sanitizer to people. And then with the vaccine coming out, they helped people sign up to make appointments because, you know, in the beginning, it was very difficult to find openings for an appointment. And so I was speaking with them for my article, and they said, you know, we want this to continue, to keep going, maybe take the emergency out of the name and just be the Communications Assistance Center, just to have another resource to help people. Because another thing the pandemic showed us is that people are slipping through the cracks, and that there it is sort of exposing underlying issues such as hunger, people not being able to have access to food, transportation, access to medical care, and again, broadband, these things that people need to be able to be connected to. So I think, you know, those are some of the changes that I've been seeing in terms of how local government is run sort of on a day-to-day basis. I think that has, you know, pretty much stayed the same.
So we're wrapping up here. So I want to thank everyone for joining us today. But before we go, are there any last words that you want to give our listeners? Before we go, anybody? Chris, Isabel, Owen?
Oh, you know, the everyday mantra of our times, like get vaccinated. Whatever else you do, make sure you get vaccinated, be socially safe and distant, you know, and then, hey, we can all go out and have a drink.
There you go. Isabel, any last words?
Yeah, I think I touched on this a little bit earlier, but I think that people, you know, should be involved with their local governments, you know, the town, village, or county. And while, you know, it is our job to write about it and cover these meetings, you know, I think people can really become involved and have their voices heard. And I think that's part of, you know, a functioning society, not to get too deep here. And, but yeah, with the pandemic, like we've said, you know, it does seem like more people are participating, especially at the county level that I, you know, cover the legislature meetings, people have been showing up. So I think that's a good thing.
How about you, Owen? Any last words?
Yeah, I would kind of give a similar message as Isabel, that, you know, really just that participation in local government is, I think us reporters or we reporters, you know, see firsthand just how important it is to be involved in local government. Like I mentioned before, that issue with the media ordinance that in Honesdale that people didn't like, if, you know, word didn't spread about it and people didn't, you know, a big group of people didn't get on that Zoom call to tell the counselors how much they oppose this ordinance, it probably would have just kind of ended up getting voted through without much comment about it. But because, you know, the public showed up and showed the counselors, you know, how they felt about it, you know, the ordinance basically got tabled until it was rewritten into something more acceptable. So, you know, I think it just is, you know, we get a lot of people get consumed with, you know, national politics and, you know, things that are happening on the federal level a lot, but it is worth it. And you do see a lot more direct results when you kind of spend some time getting to know your local government and getting involved in it. Even though, you know, it may seem boring to a lot of people to attend a 2-hour long, you know, borough meeting that is mostly about zoning issues and, you know, applying for grants. It reminds me of a quote. I don't remember the wording exactly, but I was watching this documentary about the firefighters who fight forest fires out west. And one of the firefighters described his job as it's hours and hours of boredom followed by moments of pure chaos. And I think that can kind of be what it's like covering the local meetings sometimes, because it can be, you know, a few hours of some very dry stuff. And then all of a sudden, you know, there's some issue, some topic, and everyone is standing up, yelling at each other, banging their hands, and everyone, you know, wants to be involved in that conversation. So you don't want to miss out when that conversation breaks out.
I think, I think we did not point out enough how boring it can be sometimes. Yeah. I just wanted to say that.
It can be. But like I said, when sometimes there's like, I know a couple of times in I've been covering meetings that this wait is the last minute. It could be the last 5 minutes of a 2-hour meeting. And someone says something that just drops a bombshell of like, oh, by the way, this happened. And if, you know, if you weren't there, you could have missed it, you know. And also to Owen's point, I've seen it myself, how the public has come up in, you know, in favor or opposed against an issue, and them just showing up and being at the meeting and being present and speaking their views has sort of changed the course of this particular legislature that they were against or in favor of. So there is, you know, there's that point that, you know, people should get involved, and especially if there are issues that they are passionate about or concerned about. These things happen at the town board meetings and the village board meetings. The laws are created there, and how your tax dollars are spent are decided there. So it's always good to be involved, and obviously you can be involved, and we have busy lifestyles. That's why, you know, the world has us. Has Isabel Briverman going to the meetings, has Chris Rowley attending the meetings, has Owen Walsh attending these meetings and reporting on them and bringing it back to the public saying, hey, this is what happened at your meeting. So if you can't attend a meeting, you know, subscribe to your local paper, your local podcast or whichever to get your local news. So thank you so much for everyone for joining us. We were talking to Owen Walsh for the River Reporter, Isabel Braverman for the Sullivan County Democrat, Chris Rowley with the Shawanagunk Journal and News Atomic. I'm Patricia Rabao for WJFF. This has been another episode of WJFF's Reporters Roundtable. Thank you so much, everyone, for joining us. I do really appreciate it.
Thanks
thank
for
you.
Having me.
Hi, this is Patricia. Just a small programming note. This was Owen Walsh's last Reporters Roundtable. Owen Walsh from the River Reporter. He's moving on from the paper. So we thank him for being part of all the episodes of the Reporters Roundtable and for all the work he did for WJFF. And tune in next month for a new episode of the Reporters Roundtable from WJFF.